Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. A couple of weeks ago, Mike didn't show up for the show, and I joked about him going over to the VA hospital and having his body parts replaced. That was a joke. It's my oaky humor. He really didn't have to have any body parts replaced. It was a checkup over at the VA hospital, Mike.
Yes, that was all it is. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry for the misunderstanding.
It's okay.
People thought, oh, my gosh, what's wrong with this guy? He's in desperate conditions. He's going over to Prescott to get his body.
It's a new liver, a new heart.
Yeah, a new heart. Oh, my gosh. So, sorry, folks.
He got worried about my remarks
about his body parts being replaced.
I did listen to the show on the way to the VA hospital, and you guys did a great job without me. There's a difference between not showing up and letting people know that you're not going to be there.
You did let us know. We knew your body parts were
replaced. That's right. They just need a little repair.
Yes. So the body parts are all repaired, and you're back.
Yes, working very well, thank you.
And Gary LeMaster,
want to get that
one
out.
Of our editors and producers, is joining us today.
Good morning.
And it's Veterans Day, Mike.
It is Veterans Day, and it's interesting. I was talking to one of my Iraqi veteran students, and the change. I'm a Vietnam era. I never served in combat, but I did spend 9 years in the military. I'm a Vietnam era guy, and the change toward the military, this young man and I, this 22 year old and I were talking about how we're always being thanked for our service. And certainly that's for me, a different thing. And he said, he's kind of getting a little tired of it, but it's better than the alternative. But anyway, here we are being thanked for our service, and on this day especially, that's great, guys. Veterans, it is kind of an exclusive club. As I now roam the halls of the Veterans Service medical organizations, I'm sort of getting back into it, and it's an interesting experience. It's nice to have this recognition, I guess. But there's a lot of people who did an awful lot, regardless of the sources and the causes: Afghanistan, Iraq, Vietnam, and everything in between.
Grenada, don't forget, we can go. Panama Canal.
There's no lack of conflicts that the United States likes to send its military into now. The reason they get sent into these conflicts is a subject of this radio show and will be in the future. All that aside, politics aside, men and women, donning the uniforms of, and representing the United States is nice to be recognized for that. That's all.
To segue into our show today, we're going to be talking about Benghazi. And it's not only American military people who die serving their country overseas. It's American diplomats. I think Gary has some statistics.
Let me say one more thing on that.
Sure.
I did participate in the Yavapai College, participated in the Day of Remembrance, and we read 7,000 names of dead from Afghanistan and Iraq wars. It took about 7 hours. There was 25 readers. And there were also civilians on the list. There were CIA on the list. It was a lot of cultures, I guess, have a tradition of chanting. It was an odd, I don't know, it seemed like an odd thing to do. I was asked to take part in it, not because of my veteran, just because I worked there. But when they found out I was a veteran, then they got a twofer. But there was this odd effect that reading the 7,000 names of the American dead from Afghanistan and Iraq did have quite a sobering effect. I started to say a lot of traditions, I guess, have a tradition of chanting, and certainly this felt like a chant. And reader after reader There was one reader there that participated in a protest in when there was 200 names, and she was in tears. There are ways of remembering, and this was one way of remembering, was as this particular institution, and as well as about 100 others nationwide, read the names, all of the names, every year, and all of the names were read, and that's all. Next, Benghazi. Let's talk about Benghazi.
Well, there was, and I was going to say, there was 157 attacks on American diplomatic facilities over a 15-year period. 9 Americans were killed. And then in 2012, in September 11, 2012, there was an attack on the American compound in Benghazi. It's referred to as a consulate. It wasn't a consulate or an embassy. It was a compound. And we now find out, of course, there's a much larger CIA compound a mile away. And it was mostly seems to be a sort of intelligence operation. But the four people killed, two of them were rescuers. In other words, I think that you have to understand that it's not all like the movies, you know, and so there are two people killed, and then the rescuers, and two of the rescuers are killed. I mean, this is a sort of thing that happened. Benghazi has become a huge political football for Republicans and for the right wing, and the further to the right you go, the more the conspiracy theories are. But it's in the news again. A year later, and I looked at when we did the show. We did the show on 11/26/12 about Benghazi, and here we are, almost exactly a year later, talking about Benghazi again. Why? Because it's in the news again. There was a major CBS report, Gary, about Benghazi that has had to be withdrawn.
And a minor apology. I thought the apology that they made yesterday was rather
tepid
was
would be the word
lame.
Tepid,
I
sure.
think is a more accurate. it to me, you know, their big story that they led 60 Minutes a couple of weeks ago on Benghazi was really an example of very bad journalism. And you know, I'm a graduate of a journalism school and practiced journalism in addition to other things, but there were so many red flags that you know should have gone up with this witness, you know, supposed eyewitness.
So it sounded pretty phony from the beginning, and yet CBS News. I worked briefly for CBS News in New York, and the most minor position you could get your hand on, except for sweeping the floors. But there are pictures of Edward R. Murrow and standing up to Joseph McCarthy. There are pictures of Edward R. Murrow almost every room. He's like an icon there. And this is this great news organization. I work for them. They have huge film and video libraries. They have all these producers. And they bought into a pretty obviously phony story.
They pretty much emasculated, first of all, CBS. They just hollowed out the entire news bureau in the 80s. They decided to go for ratings rather than news, and so they cut their huge news gathering operation.
This is true, folks. Even when I was there, they were cutting back. What's happened in the news business, it's very expensive to have people stationed in a country, right? Have American reporters stationed in a country. And even when I worked for CBS, they were cutting back all their offices abroad. And what they do then, when you don't have that, is you have a local stringer, a local person who's writing maybe for a bunch of different media, or you send a reporter in at the last minute when there's some crisis to report on the story. That's very different from having somebody on the ground year after year who knows the country in detail.
I'm not interested in apologizing for CBS News. I realize a journalism degree is worthless and that a marketing degree is really much, much more useful. And that's if you're going to approach any media, go there with a marketing degree, certainly not with a journalism degree. However, let's talk about Benghazi and this incredible how this the poor murder of these Americans became this right-wing cause. And there's only one party, you know, there's only one group to blame here. This is not a different position. They didn't take a different position on Benghazi. They lied. They lied about it. And they had. And they had. We're going to read. I'm going to read a list of folks here. The hoaxers, as David Brock calls them. We're going to look. We're going to talk about the hoaxers. So it's not like they took this as an opportunity. It's this poor, this terrible event as an opportunity for some sort of political game.
So let's go back and look at Benghazi, and then let's come back and talk with Gary again about what happened to CBS. What happens when a major news organization bites into these fraudulent things? They're not the only ones, right, Gary?
That's what I was just going to say. It's not just CBS. There's been a comedy of journalistic errors from one news organization.
CNN bit into, and ABC both bit into the story. The only people so far was NBC, the sort of the national networks that kind of stayed out of the really scandalously bad reporting. But maybe we'll go into those incidents. So you have this Republican right-wing propaganda machine, and it obviously goes directly to Fox News. But what happens, folks, and we'll talk about it a little later in the show, is when this begins to permeate the mainstream media, when 60 Minutes decides to prove their street cred with the far right by coming up with a story that has a lot of holes in it from the beginning.
Good way to put it.
When CNN doesn't check their information, and what ABC ran with the story based on what a Republican staffer told them.
Right.
Was the content of a cable, which turned out to be false. This is all part of the news cycle problem, but it's also a problem of trying to have false balance. Mike?
Fact check, you bet. And that's what it's all about, checking the facts. I want to talk about the Benghazi hoax, which came out recently, and I want to give the authors here, and certainly we'll be talking about information. David Brock, Ari Rabin-Hart, and I mispronounced the last name, have, and Media Matters for America, one of my favorite organizations for a long time, and then they come out with this this wonderful compilation of.
It's an openly progressive media watch organization. It's a liberal media organization that watches conservative media. For years and years, Fox News had a free hand.
Run by an ex-conservative. We can give the pedigree of Media Matters.
But the point is that they're open about who they are and what they do, but their work is extremely good and very accurate.
Yeah, they list, and I just want to read this into the record. And this is, if this is a good time to get a cup of coffee, the hoaxers here, these are the people who have been perpetrating the hoax for the last year. And, Senator Kelly, I can't pronounce it, Iotti, Eric Bolling, the host of Fox News, Ambassador John Bolton is a Fox News contributor. You see him on there all the time for us, and foreign policy advisor for Romney and Ryan. Gretchen Carlson is a host on Fox News. Representative Jason Chadwitz, a guy from Utah, Republican from Utah. Joseph DeGenova is an attorney. Steve Doocy, a host on Fox News. I have to admit, I'm not a big fan. I'm not a big fan. Senator Lindsey Graham, Sean Hannity, Representative Daryl Issa, House Committee and Oversight on Government Reform, that's Issa. Brian Kinnamed, Senator John McCain, Stuart Stevens, Victoria Tosining, and Ambassador Richard Williamson, foreign policy advisor for the Romney Ryan campaign.
No relative of mine, as far as I know.
And I get an update almost weekly from our own Paul Gosar.
Oh, there you go.
Who has become the chief propagandist for the committee investigating this.
Let's just go back for a minute. What happens in Benghazi is that there's an attack on this American compound in Benghazi. Benghazi is where the revolution in Libya starts. The new ambassador to Libya, Christopher Stevens, that's where he has his base during the Libyan revolution. This is where the thing gets going. He has a lot of friends there and so forth and so on.
And he had spent a lot of time in Libya during the revolution and considered the Libyans very close friends. And so he was not at all afraid of the Libyans.
Or he was afraid of going to Benghazi, but he had no hesitation. He was joyful about going back and seeing his friend. The problem is, and I think this is something that people don't get from watching so many movies and stuff, is that he had a lot of friends in Benghazi. The pro-American militia ran out, destroyed the compounds of the guys that they believed were behind the attack on the compound. They ran out one of these Islamic extremist organizations out of the town. But sometimes, you know, your enemies are closer than your friends. This is all going to happen. It happens over a 12-hour period, but the pattern of deaths is just almost immediate. The attack on the compound, it's a rented house. How does this become this huge campaign? We have all these attacks on Americans, and we never have it being used this violently for or this extremely for partisan purposes. Part of it, the basis, is the Romney campaign. And the Romney campaign starts the talk about the administration has apologized, and that's why we have the problem. And they're talking about a statement issued by the Cairo embassy saying, look, there's a movie out. And the movie is just a hateful little piece of nonsense. There's a problem with the Islamic street, with extremists using any attack on Islam and the Prophet as a reason to riot. And there are riots in 20 countries.
A huge riot in Cairo.
3,000 people in front of the American embassy. They pull down the flag. They raise up another flag. So it's a, Benghazi takes in a place in a context of violent anti-American, demonstrations. And it's something that we can't really do anything about because there's free speech here. People are, have a right to make any kind of a terrible movie they want to make. We can't really do anything about it. We can't suppress it. And yet it gets us involved into all these conflicts.
To put everything in perspective, I think you need to look at all of the American embassies, consulates, and compounds around the world. The embassies are generally quite well defended with American Marines stationed in each of the embassies. The consulates and the other compounds there was a guy on a news show a couple of weeks ago who was saying that a former ambassador saying that virtually every one of the consulates and compounds basically consists of a compound with a large fence around it and not much else, and they rely on the security forces of that particular country to help defend it. So, you know, they're all fairly vulnerable. Except for the big embassies.
They want to have local security forces, folks, to soften the impression. You have this huge embassy. If you have guys who speak the language, who are from the country doing the front work out front, to be honest, it softens the blow of that, that some people feel like there's this dominating presence.
So this attack happened. There was a lot of confusion. Stevens himself had rejected extra security. He dies as a result of smoke inhalation because they set the house on fire. And they find him in his bedroom and dead from. They tried to save him, I think they worked 45 minutes and finally realized he was dead. But it was a smoke inhalation. The security forces, American security from the CIA compound, fought their way into the so-called consulate and extracted the survivors and the bodies of those who died. When this happens, Susan Rice, just to give a little background, Susan Rice goes on one of the news shows on a Sunday morning with talking points scripted for her by the CIA. The CIA had put together talking points to cover the fact that there was a CIA installation in Benghazi.
The other thing is that the giant conspiracy to keep quiet what happened is a lot about not wanting to tip off the people that they're investigating, because they already know that whatever, and folks, we have the original accounts. There's an organization called Open Source, and it's basically intelligence community sending to Open Source for academics and for people in government translations of reports all over the world. And we know that the Chinese government news organization, the French, are all reporting the same story about demonstrations getting out of hand and this attack. So it's not a uniquely United States take on it. It turns out to be wrong. And what we find whenever you look at these situations is the initial reports, and this is, I've said this before, my take on this, the initial reports of every incident you see are always going to be significantly wrong, have significant problems. And that's just, you know, it's hard to figure out a shooting in the United States where you have American police on the ground, much less this obscure compound over in Benghazi, where you really don't have the resources immediately. The other thing is, remember, folks, if people are killed, you don't want to just get more people killed. You don't want to just charge in and get a whole bunch more of your guys killed. When you want to recover bodies from 9/11, you don't want the rescuers to die too. Right. Then this is just practicality.
Is the truth of Benghazi, and then why a political party? Well, we know why they're going to keep this alive until 2016. It doesn't matter what
That's the truth.
It doesn't matter what the truth is. We're going to talk about truth this morning. Gary's already kind of given us a little background here of what really happened there and the situation that was accurate, and we're going to finish talking about what happened at the compound. But what's the main conversation is what Republicans did with this terrible event and why they're using it the way they're using it. Now, like you said, it was the Romney campaign, that it was after the conventions. His campaign was in the toilet. He went from 1 point ahead to 6 points behind overnight, at least according to some polls. And they were desperate to change the story. Boom, this was it. They had their conspirators at Fox News and other places. They had their, and so the Benghazi hoax began.
Right. It begins with the Romney campaign doing this attack, accusing the president of being sympathetic to the demonstrators. Well, based on a misreading of the cable that he had nothing to do with, the administration quickly denies it. But that doesn't really matter, right, Gary?
Well, you know, the administration did call it an act of terrorism. There was a famous thing in the debate where the moment when Romney was corrected by Crowley. But to follow up, just to kind of finish on the facts, following the attack and the deaths of the four Americans and Chris Stevens, administration and the State Department appointed what they called the Accountability Review Board, which looked into every aspect of the event, all of the cables from every involved organization. It was headed up by two highly respected nonpartisan people. One was former Ambassador Thomas Pickering, and the other was Admiral Mullen. Two people with sterling reputations, and they published a report that blamed the terrorists and as they should have, but blamed a couple of mid-level State Department people for a lack of communication. There was also concern over the security at Benghazi, but part of that was complicated by the fact that the Republican House had cut the State Department security budget by something like $26 million. So there was all sorts of aspects to it, but they couldn't find any culpability by the administration or by the leadership of the State Department. Should have been end of story. And the Bush administration, to put things in perspective, there were 9 attacks on embassies with resulting in 48 deaths. None of them American, but they were people working in the embassies. 9 separate attacks all over the world, and there were no big scandal-rama investigations of any of those. Now those very same people that supported the Bush administration have now used this to attack the Obama administration. That's really what it comes down to.
So it's a systematic attack. And I think what Gary's alluding to is the fact that they try to blame the president before the election. If you notice, our show about this took place after the election because we think this is an important event to sort of illustrate a really dark side of American politics, which is repeated desire to make something out of something that's very, very much not that.
Both sides do it, but the Republicans have raised it to a fine art. The accountability report is what Gary was talking about. Hillary Clinton started that investigation a week after Benghazi. And then
allowed the Republicans some leeway because when the reports start actually finding out what happened takes months.
Right.
But now that report a year later, the report's in and we have an accounting of it. The people involved who they blame for it have been sanctioned.
What's also lost in this is Christopher Stevens and the others that were killed. We're not only employees of the State Department, employees of Hillary Clinton's. Christopher Stevens was a friend of Hillary's. So, it's not likely that she or anyone in the State Department is going to put anybody intentionally at risk, especially if they're friends and longtime employees.
Yeah, and there's no one from the top to be able to see down into the risk. Secondly, he is an ambassador, and if the ambassador says, I think I should go to Benghazi, who would overrule him? It'd have to be somebody high in the State Department. Would have to have a serious, codifiable reason. So there's a whole series of conflicts, folks. First, did Obama – it's hard for us to understand why the Republicans and the conservatives are so concerned about whether this was called an act of terrorism or not. And so what it turns out Obama said, and Gary alluded to it, is he called it an act of terror. And so you have this long thing on Fox News where they say an act of terror is different than an act of terrorism. It's just nonsense. I mean, I don't know what to do. You have using Susan Rice, and Susan Rice is a African American woman. She's in the UN. She has no line control over any of the events. She's being talked about as the future Secretary of State. She's given talking points from the CIA and the State Department and the White House. They all back her, things are back her, goes all around. Petraeus signs off on them, and she goes before, and they use this, it's like, as a scapegoat. The Republicans have got to get somebody, and so they keep her from becoming Secretary of State. And, I don't know, from a Democratic point of view, it seems to me the administration backed down, and that they had found absolutely nothing that she did wrong. But when you don't appoint somebody based on a bunch of charges, which turn out to be not true, it puts them under a cloud.
Let's look, let's bring it back to today. As of now, this has been going on, as Steve has said, for more than a year now. This whole, scandal, of Benghazi. CBS, does the 60 Minutes, as I mentioned before, there were all sorts of red flags from a journalistic standpoint that, you know, his testimony, this Davies testimony, was completely counter to all of the independent reports and the reports coming from the administration and the State Department. He claims he, you know, made it into the compound, but too late. Yet, and he had told the reporters that he had previously lied when he told his employer, he was a private contractor for a security firm.
He's a mercenary. He's a British mercenary. Why isn't the compound protected by American soldiers?
And he made all sorts of claims that you know, that he had told everybody this compound was in jeopardy, et cetera, et cetera. And then he claims that he heroically made it to the compound, even though he had told his employer otherwise.
He had spent the day in a seaside villa in Benghazi and didn't even know it was happening.
And he was afraid of being exposed, so he asked to be interviewed under an assumed name. Yet he didn't want to disguise his identity, you know, his face or his voice. That too should raise a red flag. You know, this is just not a normal circumstance for a key witness.
He previously asked Fox News for some money.
Right.
To talk to them.
And then yet another red flag is that he had written a book that he was peddling to CBS's own Simon and Schuster. CBS owns the publisher.
Yeah.
And so he was peddling this book, which gives him an obvious profit motive. Again, as a journalist, that should raise a very big red flag. It's as if you're paying, you know, the guy is asking to be paid a sum for
telling. It's also a clever story. He says he climbed into the compound and he hit one of the attackers with the end of a rifle butt. And, you know, if he had shot the guy full of a bunch of rounds, it would be checkable. But if you claim that you hit somebody with a rifle butt and knocked him out or something, then there's no way to check that it's not verifiable. It's kind of, and his whole story is filled with these kind of suspiciously, interesting details.
This is one of the big lies, right? This guy admitted he lied.
He admitted he lied to his employer, like Gary said. But he told the reporters that he lied to his reporter, and it never makes any sense why he would do that. And then what they find out, right, Gary, is that he also lied to the FBI.
Yes. You know. Which the true absurdity of this whole 60 Minutes report is that they were, 60 Minutes was defending the report even when it came out that he had also lied to the FBI. It raised some concern from him, but they were defending it, the veracity of the report, by saying, well, the guy had already told us he lied, so, you know, he's lied, yes, so what? You know, he's lied again. If you have somebody, as a reporter who is telling you a story, who is an admitted liar, that puts everything he says or she says in question.
Why would you go with the story except that it's going to make a big splash?
Right.
And you're trying to prove your street cred with conservatives.
This guy's name is Dylan Davies?
Yes.
He's not doing interviews, and his publisher is recalling his book.
Books can recall because it's fraudulent.
But I have to admit,
That's the thing, you have a mercenary, and you find out that the mercenary is writing a phony description of what happened in order to get rich. I mean,
let's see, mercenary. What's the definition? But anyway.
Well, the thing is, there are good mercenaries and bad mercenaries. There are honorable ones and dishonorable ones. They hired this guy.
Honorable,
he saw a chance to get rich. That's all it is. Yeah. With this particular story, the real scandal is that CBS went with it. They didn't check it. The story felt phony from the beginning, right, Gary? And they went with it anyway because the reward for telling it is so outweighs the possibility that this is crap.
Well, and that's the same reason why the Republicans ran with it for a year, is because the reward for lying is so much, it keeps the base inflamed. There's just too much reward.
First, they try to get the president, and after he's reelected, Then they tried to get Hillary Clinton because Hillary Clinton is likely. Now, we don't really know what's going to happen. She's a likely candidate for the presidency.
In the middle of Benghazi, Barack Obama gets reelected by a landslide, folks, a landslide. In other words, the effect of Benghazi, giving the American people some credit anyway, apparently, that during this whole thing, in that 6 months after Benghazi, Obama gets reelected. Of course, the real target is Clinton, because they want to prevent.
They're trying to come up with ammunition, and we're talking about it this year. We talked about it last year. When the election happens, if Hillary Clinton does get the nomination, you're going to see this story. And the myths of Benghazi are sort of interesting. The myth that Obama went on an apology tour of the Middle East turns out to be absolutely factually false.
Well, Clinton was never interviewed. And that's one of the big the right's big complaints about.
Well, right now you have Lindsey Graham, Senator Graham, who is blocking the personally blocking the appointments of the nominations for the Federal Reserve and for the Director of Homeland Security until he gets a public the chance to publicly interview some of the people that survived the Benghazi attacks. The Attorney General and Justice Department have said that they don't want to allow these people to publicly testify, because it may jeopardize any legal actions that come after this. They have offered them up to testify to, Graham and others privately. But they've refused the Republicans have refused that.
The reason they refuse to allow them to make private testimony is because they want to make public hay out of this, right? Because there's no other reason. Why not just take the private testimony? And you can leak, as particularly ISIS committee is, phony versions of whatever they say, and then the Democrats will come back and say, well, no, they didn't really say that. Here's what they actually said. I mean, ISIS got embarrassed the last time he did this stuff. ISIS is the head of one of the investigatory committees.
Well, an ISIS committee for a long time was claiming publicly that Thomas Pickering and Admiral Mullen had refused to testify to the committee. At the same time, virtually the same time that ISA is saying that, Pickering had previously and was at the same time saying, I'll testify anytime they want me to. I'm more than happy to testify about what we found in the report. So again, it was much ado about
nothing.
So
that's the facts, but what's underlying it is a Republican myth that Obama made an apology tour. That Obama is weak in defending the United States. And here you guys, the problem is the guy killed Osama bin Laden or had Osama bin Laden killed. And the drone program, which is very controversial, has been very, very effective in killing off huge numbers of Al-Qaeda operatives. And so you have a problem is that it's on the face of it absurd, but that doesn't stop you. So the myth is Obama's weak on national defense. This is the same myth that we talked about before, folks, where Obama is somehow un-American. There's something about him, we're not saying exactly what, but makes him kind of not understand America. This is a theme of the Romney campaign and Republicans generally. And then there's the theme that, we were prevented from saving these guys, that military could have gone in and we could have flown a plane over there and scared the terrorist. We could have. And it turns out when the military testified, it's just all nonsense. There was no way. The fact is they sent in a rescue operation. The rescue operation worked. The reason they didn't want more military is because they're pulling everybody out of Benghazi. So the myth that there's this weak liberal who's not going to let the military do what they want to do is another deep recurrent Republican myth, like the myth that who lost China from our youth, right? The Democrats, weak Democrats, were not hard enough, not anti-communist enough to defend China. And you've got this country of, what, 2 billion people or whatever it is, and there's no way anybody lost it. But it's these recurrent myths that the Republicans play to every time.
It's not up to the U.S. to lose or save in any of this, especially China. Yeah. It was such a complex situation.
And the problem they have with Benghazi and the problem they have with Libya is that the Libyan operation that Obama backs is very, very effective and costs us almost nothing in either lives or money. The problem we end, and the reason that I think that Mike and Gary and I are not really enthusiastic about any kind of intervention in Syria, is you get the chaos that you see in Libya now, which goes on and on. It's one thing to get rid of this vicious dictator. It's another thing to build a civil society. And that's the problem they have in Iraq. Iraq is beginning to fall apart again now.
Part of the problem with Syria is that there are numerous factions that are fighting as rebels against Assad. Some of those factions are in fact Al-Qaeda sponsored, Al-Qaeda backed. Another part of them is backed by the government of Iran. So who do you pick? You know, if you're going to support the rebels, do you want to arm these people with all sorts of shoulder-fired missiles and things that you know, it's a very complex situation.
I think one reason that they've hesitated to go into Syria, despite all oppression from the right in the United States, from people like Lindsey Graham and McCain, is they saw what happened in Libya, where it was fairly easy to get rid of Gaddafi, but very, very hard to do anything positive, right, Mike?
Right. Yeah, well, yeah, the Benghazi Libya, the Benghazi Syria connection is the subject for hours of a conversation. But the idea is that the Benghazi hoax, that here at this point in November 2013, we're talking about a long-time hoax perpetrated, fed, continued by one political party for political gain long beyond when it's been proven time and time again to be not represented the way they like to represent it. So now it's not unusual for a party to take any incident and try to get some political gain out of it. But in this particular case, these four dead Americans, the consul, the 34-year-old consulate guy, Smith, Stevens, and the two embassy personnel that were killed. This is not politics. There is no failure. We've had an investigation. We've had plenty of lies, you know, all around. But the fact that we're talking about it today proves how effective a lie when it's repeated by people with the Fox News audiences that they have. I mean, all these people have their own their bases, and we
and
just
people
talk
really
about
believe
it forever.
That there's something terribly hidden in that Benghazi
that
is the
hidden.
Biggest
That's
scandal
right.
in decades
right.
and stuff, and they really do, Mike. And
listen,
we'll address this, but Mike has some
announcements. I want to get this in.
Here.
Yeah, yeah. We got our movie this month. This is our sponsoring organizations, two wonderful organizations that give us some support. Democrats of the Red Rocks and Democrats of the Verde Valley, along with other individuals, keep us going. They have their free movie this month is November 13th at 6 p.m. at the Sedona Library. November 13th, 6 p.m. It's called Bitter 70, and it's I'm just going to read the flyer. It was an effective act of civil disobedience demanding government and industry accountability. In 2008, University of Utah, of all places, economics student Tim DeChristopher committed an act of civil disobedience which would redefine patriotism in our time. Apparently, he was trying to.
It was a very cool thing. He went to this bidding where they're buying oil and gas rights.
BLM, Bureau of Land Management. Yeah.
And he bid on it, and he didn't have any money, so they put him in jail for 21 months.
Yeah.
It's just kind of a great story. On November 21st, we're having a program, Democrats of the Red Rocks, and their breakfast, which is the third Thursday of most months, is having a program on private prisons called your money, your morality, your choice. And it's with Diane Post, and she's going to be talking about the use of private prisons. And private prisons, much like the Benghazi story, is ideology triumphing over common sense, because private prisons cost more than public prisons do. And well, and there's no evidence that they're any more effective.
We'll have her on the show.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, it's and it's a big deal for Arizona, because we have a governor that likes private prisons.
Next week, Jim Ledbetter, healthcare. You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.